This is Aaron Pednutty, and today I am talking to you from the Rally to Shut Down Detention Centers at City Park in Glens Falls, New York. And I am interviewing Diana Barnes of the Saratoga Immigration Coalition, who teaches U.S.-Mexico border studies at Skidmore College. She just gave a talk here. Diana, you just want to talk us through the main bullet points of the speech you just gave?
The main bullet points of the speech that I just gave. I really want people to understand that we are living in a reality that is abnormal, that when there is a strategic cruelty that is implemented as a form of deterrence for people who come to our shores, our southern border, to look for safety, is not normal. This is not who we are as a people. It is not who we are as a country. I wanted to make that clear. I also wanted to let folks know that we have had successes. Tornillo, Children's Detention Center Jail, was shut down on January 11th, and Homestead was just emptied out of its young prisoners this week, a couple of days ago, actually. So, and that was a lot in part because people bore witness. People stayed outside of those facilities every day, every night. They camped out. They witnessed what was going on. They made a lot of noise. They took pictures. They prompted representatives, politicians, elected officials to come and tour these facilities and make noise about it and let the world know what we're doing in this country, jailing children. And the conditions within those prison systems are horrible. Even at their best, they're horrible. Children walk single file. They're not allowed to touch each other or comfort each other. The punishments are strict if they do so. They are subjugated. They are suppressed. They are scared. They don't know where they're going. They don't know why they're there. And they can age out of those systems and go into an adult facility at the age of 18, which is quite frightening.
So when you say we're in an abnormal situation, how comparable do you think that that is to fascistic situations in the 20th century?
I think that what's different is the aspect of abject cruelty to children. I mean, I think this is one of the things that sets us apart right now. And just the impunity that goes on within those holding cells on the border. I have worked in the shelters on the border with Annunciation House for weeks at a time, and I will tell you that every single one of the asylum seekers coming out of those shelters is sick. Every single one of them has stories of abuse that they experience inside of those shelters. I mean, I think the difference is that there is absolute impunity on the U.S.-Mexico border right now, and that our policies, if you even just consider the names of our policies, the migrant protection policy, there's nothing that protects migrants in Juarez, Ciudad Juarez. They're on the streets. They're in makeshift shelters. The Mexican government does not have the wherewithal in Ciudad Juarez to protect those migrants. Violence in Juarez is becoming increasingly more violent, and those migrants are, when they get to the border, they're exhausted. Some of them have traveled 2,000 miles on the tops of trains, walking hundreds of miles. They get to the border. They're either turned away immediately or they go in and they're processed in holding cells. Within the holding cells, the conditions are horrific. The cells are kept at excruciatingly cold temperatures deliberately. Any outer clothing is taken away from them. If they had sweaters or coats, they have them taken away from them. They're given a Mylar blanket and nothing more. There's no room for them to lie down. They are not provided with decent food or decent water. The facilities are overcrowded and everybody gets sick. And on top of that, the parents that I spoke to said that they were insulted constantly. They said, "I can handle these insults." The Border Patrol agents would tell them in Spanish, "You don't belong here. Why are you here? Why did your father bring you here? You need to go back home," in front of the children. And he said, people will say, "I can handle that, but my 3-year-old, my 4-year-old, my 5-year-old will carry this with them for the rest of their lives." There's no reason to treat us that way. On so many levels, it's problematic.
So that level of otherization is alarming indeed. One of the issues that emerged in the media a few weeks ago is whether or not the term concentration camps is appropriate. Where do you stand on this?
As we know what a concentration camp is colloquially in this country, I would say that we are not, it's not a concentration camp that we know as a concentration camp. If you look at that word, José Martí, a poet from Cuba, was, if you read old literature, put in what they called a concentration camp, a camp with certain dynamics within it. And in that regard, yes, they are horrible conditions. But to, for me personally, and I'm not speaking for anybody else, just my own opinion, I don't liken this to the Holocaust. I don't see it as the same thing. What I do see is that we are dehumanizing anybody and everybody who has brown skin and comes to our border and asks for help. That's what we're doing right now. This gets its very own category. It doesn't need to be compared with anything else. It's horrific on its own.
The formal definition of a concentration camp is when you concentrate humans in small spaces. One of the distinctions that emerged around the debate of AOC's reference to these camps as concentration camps is that a death camp and a concentration camp are not the same thing. The phenomenon of concentration camps has a 20th century history that goes beyond the Holocaust. And do you think that there's at least some room for comparison there?
In terms of concentrating a large amount of people in a small area, absolutely. And seven children have died in Border Patrol custody in the past, I don't know how many months, but yeah, they're definitely concentrated in there and they're treated terribly. And there are atrocities that occur. One woman who I spent an evening with in the emergency room with her and her daughter, she said that every morning at 4 a.m., a Border Patrol agent would come in and strip search her. According to ICE protocol, you cannot strip search anybody unless they have left the facility and come back. 4 a.m. every morning, this Border Patrol agent came in and strip searched these women. This young woman, this young mother, pulled up her shirt and showed me her breasts, and they were full of bruises where the Border Patrol agent had squeezed them so hard it made her ache. So this goes on every day at 4 a.m., and it goes unchecked. So that's what's happening in these holding cells. There is no accountability, none. So if you have one rogue Border Patrol agent, and they're not all like that, but you have one rogue Border Patrol agent, and you better believe other Border Patrol agents knew that was going on. No one stopped it.
That's awful. Could you speak to some of the things that your organization is doing to fight this?
My organization is fabulous, and I would invite anybody to join the Saratoga Immigration Coalition. We work in a peaceful way to support local immigrants. We've done some really spectacular, had some really spectacular successes. One of them was specific to the backstretch and backstretch workers last year. We have a clinic on the backstretch, and it's a medical clinic, and it needs some extra funding from NYRA. And NYRA was going to shut it down, except during the 6 weeks the racing season was operating. But folks are here on the backstretch for 6 months before and after that, right, from April until November. And they need that health clinic for immunizations, for diabetes, for high blood pressure, you name it. I mean, I have a woman I translate for who is recovering from a brain tumor. I mean, she needs to go in and see a doctor pretty regularly, aside from her neurologist and her oncologist. But they need that clinic open, and NYRA was not going to pay for it last year. And very quietly and very eloquently and very forcefully, the Saratoga Immigration Coalition stayed on it, bore witness to it, went to the press with it, and in the end, it was opened. And it will remain open, and it's in the budget this year, and hopefully, I'm told, for years to come. So that's one of the things we've done. We support local immigrants if they need a ride to the store. We have a sanctuary apartment at the Presbyterian Church in Saratoga. We do really good work. We have subcommittees, we have reading groups, we have the immigration stories at Cafe Lena. We're hands-on. When I went to Nogales, Mexico last year, I wanted to take a computer to a woman who runs a shelter. Her computer was dying. And I asked for donations. I figured I would end up buying the computer, and I was happy to do that. I sent a note out. Terry Diggory, the co-director, sent a note out, and the next meeting I had the computer paid for. I mean, people want to help. They bond together, and they stand up, and they do what's right.
Towards the end of your speech, you talked about two paradigms for contemporary reality, two ways of looking at it. Could you talk us through what those are?
We have our reality based on policy. And that reality, in terms of immigration, is a hyper-militarized border, which is really absurd because concertina wire on the outside of the wall at Nogales, Arizona, does nothing except a show of force. It's a show of force. So we have a hyper-militarized border. We have a culture of hate, and yep, that's a strong word. I don't know what else to call it. A culture of cruelty, it's a deliberate brainwashing education system of creating an other in anybody who doesn't share our culture naturally. Our reality right now is a divided citizenship. Our reality right now is a leader who creates scenarios that frankly just aren't true and repeats them over and over again, considering that people may eventually believe him, and sometimes they do. Our reality is a place of danger right now for a large part of our population. The second paradigm is a reality that can exist and also does exist and is a strong and united force of open hearts standing together and bearing witness to what's going on and resisting that first paradigm, working really diligently, continuously, through working hands, through good deeds, through small acts. When I'm on the border, there are thousands of us on the border. Thousands coming from all over the country, just getting up and going there and saying, what can I do? Here are my hands. I speak Spanish. I don't speak Spanish. I'll do laundry. I'll bathe the baby. I'll make the food. You tell me what to do and I'll do it. There are thousands of us on the border. And it is the most heartening thing to watch other people accompany these asylum seekers as you accompany them in solidarity. It is one of the most uplifting things that I will do in my life.
So two realities coexisting, and which one eventually becomes more real, which one becomes the dominant reality, is up to us collectively.
Yes, it's up to us collectively, and good always wins out.
Well, thanks very much for this interview, Diana, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.